Right. Good evening. It's this week it's Shabbat Parshat Vayera, and we're going to be looking at a discourse which was said in 1952 on Kof Cheshvan, the 20th of Cheshvan, which is the birthday of the fifth Chabad Rebbe, Reb Shalom Dovber. And so the beginning of a discourse is usually a verse from the Torah, pasuk from the Torah. And so let's just have a look at a few lines of the Chumash. So vayera elav Hashem be'elone mamre, the beginning of the Sedra. God appeared to him, that means to Abraham, in Elone Mamre, the oaks of Mamre. V'hu yoshev petach ha'ol k'chom ha'yom, and he's sitting at the entrance of the tent in the heat of the day. V'yisayna v'ya, he lifted up his eyes and he saw v'hinei shlosha anashim, and there were three men, nitzavim alav, standing over him. Vayar vayaratz dikhatam, and he saw and he ran towards them, mipetach ha'oel, from the entrance of the tent, vayishtachu atza, and he bowed down to the ground. Vayoman, he said, my masters, imna matzati chen be'enecha, if I have please found favor in your eyes, al na tavor me'al avdecha, please do not pass away from your servant. Rashi says one way of understanding this is that he's speaking to the three men who are actually, as we know, three angels. And that's whom he's speaking to when he says, please don't pass by. But the other explanation is that when it says God appeared to him, see, what does that mean, God appeared to him? Ibn Ezra says it's the fact of meeting these three angels, that's what it means, God appeared to him. Right. Hi, shalom, hello, shalom. The Kansur Bavakasha. So Ibn Ezra says it's the three angels, that is the revelation of the divine, and it's like an introduction to what's going to happen next. But Rashi, based on the Talmud, tell us that it's a separate event, that God appeared to Abraham to visit the sick. He just had Brit Milah, and there was maybe he wants a text. No camera. So God, he just had Brit Milah, and it was the third day, and it was the most intense time of weakness. So there was a divine revelation, as it were, visiting the sick, Bikur Cholim. And so one way that this verse 3 is understood, Vayomah, he said, Hashem, please don't go away, I'm just going to look after these guests. As a result of which, the Talmud says, G'dola hachnasat orchim mehakpalat penei shchina. Greater is the welcoming of guests than experiencing the revelation of the shchina, of the divine. A very interesting concept. The Zohar says that at a festive table, the poor person or the needy person who is, or in some way, who is there as a guest, represents the Shekhinah. So the spiritual influx into one's home is in fact brought about by guests. So that's another way of understanding. Anyway, then he goes on, Yukach nam at mayim, please take some water, v'lachetzu laglechem, wash your feet, v'hishanu tacha ve'etz, and lean under the tree, v'egcha pat lechem, I will take some bread, V'sa'adu libchem, and you will be able to eat, support your heart, achat tavoru, and then you will go on, because you have passed by your servant. And the next couple of verses tell us how Avraham and Sarah, they organized food and began baking cakes of bread, and Avraham went to the cattle and he took some cattle and he took some. So then we move on to verse 8. So finally he's dealt with preparing, he and Sarah, they've dealt with preparing the food. Vayikach chema v'chalav, he took butter and milk, uven habakar asher asan, and the beef which he prepared. Rashi says it was tongue with honey. Tongue with mustard. Rosh Hashanah. Overspilled. Tongue with mustard. That was the dish that was served up. And that presumably took a bit of time to cook. And so while that was cooking, there was milk food, shamenet, you know, on the spot so that they could...
Not together.
Well, it's a discussion among the commentators, you know. But one resolution of the problem is by saying first they had the milk and the chema and the shamenet, and after that they had later on, an hour later, they had the meat. Vayiten lifnehem, and he put it before them. Vuhu amed aleim tachad ha'etz, and he stood above them under the tree. Vayochelu, and they ate. And then it launches into the angels asking him, where is Sarah? And she's in the tent, and they tell him that Sarah is going to have a baby in a year's time, and she laughs, and they say, why do you laugh? And she says, I didn't laugh. Okay, but we are going to just stop at that concept of Vuhu Omed Aleim Tachad Ha'etz, he stood over them under the tree, and they ate. That's verse 8. Okay? And that is going to be the opening sentence for the discourse, the Maimah. And the Maimah is going to be something which concerns the concept of eating and the idea of different levels of spirituality, as hopefully we will explore together. However, to introduce the Maimah, there is, when the Rebbe would say a Maimah, when the Rebbe would say a discourse, there's a special nigun that would be sung in 770 called the Maimah Nigun. And this nigun, first of all, between each of the talks that the Rebbe gave, there would be singing, often very, very beautiful singing. And when it suddenly you heard the melody of the Maimah, then you knew that it's going to be followed by a discourse, by a Maimah, and that was a completely different atmosphere, and everyone would stand up. And the Rebbe behaved in a completely different way to normally when he spoke, which he spoke in a very communicative way, whereas the discourse was almost as if something was speaking through him. It was not like a person explaining something and smiling and laughing, and it was completely different. So the Maimah was like, as if the Rebbe was a channel for the Maimah. That was the feeling.
Was it like that with all the Rebbeim when they gave Rebbe discourse?
I don't know. Because I saw the Rebbe give discourses, and I never saw any of the previous Rebbeim, and although I heard it described, I heard someone who was a yeshiva bacher in Otwock, in Poland, in the 1930s. He told me a little bit about what it was like hearing a Maimah from the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok. Unfortunately, I didn't ask him how the Rebbe looked or behaved when he was saying the Maimah. What fascinated me was what this Yeshiva Bacher told me. At that time, he was Yeshiva Bacher. Now he's a very revered and respected rabbi. 10 yeshiva bacharim were allowed in to the room where the Rebbe was saying the maimah. This is in Otvot, and which was on Friday night. Then on Shabbat morning, each one of them was expected to say the whole maimah by heart to a group of people. If they were unable, if one of them was unable to say it by heart after hearing it once, next week he wouldn't be allowed in to be one of the 10. So when he told me...
What percentage were the 10 of the whole student body?
That's a good question. And I don't know the answer.
And anyway, who would have... I mean, did he listen? Who would have checked it?
Well, the bachuk isn't going to make up a maimah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be checked by the fact that a person says, oh, I heard that beautiful maimah, it was about this and this, and the other person said, well, I heard the other bachuk say it over, and it sounded, but he's not going to pretend that he's not going to make it up.
No, so he may not be aware that he doesn't remember at all.
Well, I mean, he might make a mistake, but if you've learned something by heart, you have an idea, you feel you know it.
Yeah, but they didn't have time to learn it by heart.
Hmm?
They couldn't have learned it by heart.
Well, this is the concept of a chozer.
Unless they had it printed, which is another question. Did he read it from a piece of paper?
No. No.
So how long were they? An hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? How long was it?
How long? A maimah of the previous Rebbe, we can read them. They're printed now. They weren't printed then. This is a fairly long discourse of the Rebbe. It's the kind of size that a previous Rebbe's maimah very often is. My friend Rabbi Shmulu, he was, when he was in 770, he could, and later as well, he would remember not only one maimah, he could remember much of a whole Verbrengen. And there was a very great rabbi, Rabbi Yoel Kahn, who could remember all the Ma'amorim and everything. I remember hearing on Motzei Shabbat, or after Yom Tov, where they have got the discourses that they've heard, and the Sichot, a group of people, every one of whom is able to remember 4 hours, 5 hours, at a stretch, discussing what they have heard, and going through step by step, and then this, and this, and this, and this, then I'm not sure, and then the other one would say, well, this is, and they would like be correcting each other. And then this was in the 80s. They would go upstairs in 770 in that few buildings, and there would be early Hebrew word processors where they'd be typing it all out. And then it would be faxed around the world. The Sichot of the Rebbe. But they knew it by heart from hearing it once. These are people living today.
If I told you that I saw someone flying in the street...
Look, even in the academic world, they say Gershon Sholem knew not just what the manuscript was, he knew the manuscript number for tens of thousands of manuscripts. Mm-hmm. There are scholars who focus on things. One person.
If you think of it in the secular world, when you're a therapist under supervision, you have to verbatim give back what the session said to your supervisor. And that is 1 hour, if you're lucky, and you run and write the notes. Or if it's a whole morning, you've got a whole morning. And we're normal people who've had to do it. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about people who've got a much higher level than us. I can quite see that somebody can do it.
It's
word by word.
Word by word, I had to give over. I had to say what I said and what they said, and backwards and forwards, exactly how it happened. And how you do it is you concentrate. You actually have to make sure you're not moving anything. You're completely and utterly concentrated on what's going on. Because otherwise you can't remember.
It's bitul of the self. It's abnegation of the self enables you to hear in such a way that it goes in and it becomes part of you. It's an interesting.
And it's also a neurological capacity for some people. Mm.
So, So that's the Maimon, introduction to the Maimon. So the Maimon is something special. Oh, ya, ya, ba, ya, ya, yom, ba, oh, ya, ya, la, ya, la, yom, ba, mu. Oh, ya, ba, ya, ya, ba, yom, ba, mu. Ha yi yam ba yo yam bam bum ba yo ya yi lam ba yam ba yom ha yi lam ba ya ya yom ya yi lam ba ya yi lam ba yom ha ya lam ba yi lam ba ya yam ba yi lam bam ho yam ba yom bam bum. You've got now the discourse. Now we're on the next page where the discourse itself begins. And he was standing over them under the tree and they were eating, right? So Avraham Avinu is standing over the three angels under the tree and they're eating. Right? Beautiful little scene, just that vignette. V'tzarich lahavin shaychud. I'm sorry about the abbreviation. We have to understand the connection of these two concepts. Hu omed alem, he is, hu omed alem, he's standing over them. How does this connect to the fact that they're eating? Dehine b'mash katu v'yochelu yesh b'ze beit perushim. By what it says that they add, there are two explanations. Aleph shahakavana hi nirim ko'ochlim. One is that they looked as if they were eating. They weren't really eating. After all, they were angels. V'cheinu b'midrash. That's how it is in the midrash. U'pirush hasheni, in the second explanation, second comment on this, hu sha'achlu mamash. They really were eating. V'chein muchach mezoah pashat toldot. So we have in the Zohar, in Pashat Toldot, which quotes a saying which is found in the Gemara, as lat lekachta avdit kenimusa. When you go to a city, behave as they behave there. Like we say in English, when in Rome, do as Rome does. Okay, so Rome and Israel knew that. I think it is a Latin phrase originally. Does anyone know?
Which one?
When in Rome, do as Rome does. Is it a Latin phrase? You could cook up a whole drasha, an academic drasha, on the fact that the sages, who of course had been in, you know, there's Roman Israel, have the same phrase in the Talmud, you know, and so whether that relates to a Latin concept. Anyway, so when you're in a city, behave in the way, and the city, you see, Karta, the city, usually means Rome in the Talmud. So when you're in the city, when you're in Rome, do as they behave there. Varaya, and the proof is Meha Melachim, from the angels. Because the angels, it doesn't say that they looked as if they were eating. They really were eating because the angels came down to this physical world. So they behaved the way people do in this physical world. Further, the Zohar there, Mavai explains, a man struggled with him. That's angels struggling with an angel struggling with Jacob. Now, how can he struggle with an angel? You know, is an angel physical enough to struggle with? And it explains there, yes, Sha'amalachim nitlabshu b'yosodot gashmim, the angels, which in themselves are really spiritual, ethereal, they enclose themselves in physical elements, earth, air, fire, water, which is what we are made of as well. And so therefore, there could be the wrestling. Or maybe dugma al zeh ma'achilat melachim. And it also brings an example from the eating of the angels. So there, that all indicates that the angels really were eating. Ha'imuvam izeh sha'achlu mamash. So from this, you see the Rebbe has moved from the quite the popular general view that the angels only looked as if they were eating, which is in the Midrash. And he's moved from there to the Zohar, where he's proving, really, that from the point of view of the Zohar, they really were eating. Right? Not like them. So then, now that we have the idea the angels are really eating, but tzarich lahavin shaychut ha'inyanim, we have to understand the connection between these two ideas, the vohu omed aleim, levayochelu. He is standing over them, and the fact that they're eating. With Bebet HaPirushim B'zeh, including both these two comments, these two ways of understanding what they're eating is. Ve'od tzarich lahavin, another point. Mahu ha'mayle b'zeh she'achlu ha'malachim. What is so special about the fact that the angels ate? The mashma shehu mayle gedola, because it seems as if it's something very important. Shal yedei zeh she'avram amad aleim, through the fact that Avram was standing over them, al yedei zeh pa'al behem she'yochelu, through that, he caused that they were able to eat, or that they did eat. V'tzarech lahavin, ma'u ha'mayle b'zeh, we have to understand what's significant about this. Okay. Now, so this is the way that the discourse works, is that there is an introductory section which sort of asks, as it were, logical or technical questions within the framework of Talmudic, Midrashic, or sometimes halachic discourse. And then this serves as the excuse, as it were, or the key to open a door. And in behind that door, then there is a teaching. And the teaching here, for much of the length of this rather long discourse, we'll have to summarize bits of it, is about the nature of eating. Different ways of understanding what is achieved when we eat, or different levels of eating. And then, finally, coming back to the point of Abraham standing over the angels, and because of that, they're able to eat in a particular way. And that the way in which there is a spiritual input being given by Abraham to the angels, and broader than that as well, as hopefully we will see in the next few minutes. So we're now up to Vayuvan Zeh, which is just over halfway down the paragraph. Vayuvan Zeh Bahakdim, this will be understood by first considering Mashakatuv, what is written. Vim Heochel Yoechel, a verse, a pasuk in the Torah, which says, if he will eat, Va'amru Razal, and the sages say, B'shtei Achilot HaKatuv Medaber, the Torah is talking about two kinds of eating. Achat achilat mizbeach va'achat achilat kohanim. One is the eating of the altar and the other is the eating of the kohanim. Now, we're speaking here about a certain kind of offering being brought in the temple. There are different types of offering. One kind of offering is an olah, which is simply burnt on the altar, and that's the end of it. Another kind of offering is partly burnt on the altar, and part of it is eaten by the Kohanim. There's a third type, which is partly burnt on the altar, partly eaten by the Kohanim, and partly eaten by the person who brought the Korban. However, we're really dealing here with the second kind. So there's the idea of the altar eating part of the Korban, and the Kohanim eating part of it. Achilat mizbeach hi achilat ha-korbanot. The eating of the altar means, of course, the consuming of the korbanot, the offerings. Va'achilat kohanim hi achilat adam. And the eating of the kohanim is a person eating. Umash ve'zeh ve'zeh. It compares one with the other. Da'achilat adam u'kmo achilat ha-korbanot. The eating by the kohanim is like the eating of the korbanot on the altar. How can you compare the eating of a person to the consumption of the korban, of the offering on the altar? And further, what makes it even more intriguing is Shematzinu, we find sheyesh ma'ala ba'achilat adam al achilat mizbeach. There's something extra special about the eating of the kohanim compared with the altar. Kamaima, kohanim ochlim u'balim mitkapchim. The kohanim eat, and the owner, that means the person who brought the korban, is atoned. Now, the normal case where, or very common case, where there's something offered on the altar and something eaten by the kohanim is chatat, a sin offering. So a person accidentally did a sin, and they discover this. So they bring a sin offering, and when the kohanim eat it, the owner who brought the offering, he is atoned, and the sin is erased. In other words, it's not the altar which achieves the atonement for the person, but what the altar didn't achieve, poel achilat adam, the person's eating, the kohanim, they achieve. But tzalich lavin, now how can this be? Hali achilat mizbeach, hi achilat hakorbanot. The eating by the altar, the consumption of the korbanot, is something very, very spiritual. As the Zohar says, several places, it gives in note 18, it gives two different references. The rosa de korbana ola ad rosa de ein sof. Rosa de korbana, the secret of the korban, of the offering, reaches, it rises up to the secret of the infinite. So when you offer a korban on the altar in Jerusalem, in the temple, it rises higher and higher to Ein Sof. Ve'echev shalomar she'achilat adam ilamayla yotem achilat ha'korban. How can you say that the eating by a person is in some way higher than the eating, the consumption of the korbanot on the altar? Okay, next page.
Gives you a whole new take on eating.
Yes, oh yes. Yeah, that's certainly true. Yeah.
Where does it say that achilat kohanim is what does the chatat?
Doesn't it give a reference? Kamaima, note 7. Psachim 59b. Psachim nuntet amadet. If you want to look it up.
No.
My little chapska.
You got the whole Talmud?
Yeah.
All
you've got it.
It's got everything. It's got Rashi. It's got everything on the
wall. It's got Rashi, but not Tosfot. And the... the version that I have sometimes. Hi, Judith. How are you? Sometimes the Rashi is to another page. Like, say, so you have to go to page Dalad in order to get the Rashi on page Gimel. But nothing is perfect. Hi, here we are.
Hello.
Let me. Here. Yeah. Right.
Is there everything?
Yeah. Let me find where we are.
Sorry.
That's it. It's wonderful to see. Yeah. Yeah, we're just up to there, the beginning of that page. We're talking about Abraham and the angels visiting Abraham, and Abraham and Sarah have given them a meal, very Jewish thing to do. And Abraham is standing over the angels and they're eating. So the question is, why does he have to stand over them? What is the, you know, the force of this image, him standing over the angels eating? And we're trying to understand the concept of eating. And in order to understand that, we find the idea of eating in the temple, that someone brings an offering in the temple, part of it is burnt on the altar, and part of it, the Kohanim, eat. So the fact that you have two different things, the what is happening, that the altar consumes the offering, and the priests, the Kohanim, eating. Now, these are two different types of spiritual transaction.
Does the symbol of, obviously, of under the tree, does that play an importance in the mind?
I mentioned
twice.
Yes. We'll see how it ends off. I'm not sure whether that becomes a significant point right at the end. I'm not sure. We'll see. Now, va'inyan hu dinei inyan ha-korbanot, the subject is as follows. What is an offering in the temple? The concept of the offerings, who? Shehikhivu behema gashmit al gabe hamizbeah. They offered a physical animal on the altar. And when that happens, v'nechlalet befchinet ariyah da'achal korbanin. There is the concept of the lion which consumes the offerings. That's found in the Talmud and several times in the Zohar. Look at that, footnote 9, gives a reference to the Talmud, and then a few times in different places in the Zohar. Now, what it's linking this to is a very important image in Jewish mystical thought, which is the Merkava of Yechezkel, of Ezekiel. In chapter 1 of Yechezkel, there is a very dramatic vision, which is read as the Haftorah on Shavuot, which talks about the theophany, the revelation of God at Mount Sinai. So to match that, there is a Haftorah, which is also about this divine revelation, which Yechezkel, Ezekiel saw. And in that vision, which is the focus of a whole stream of Jewish mysticism around the time of the temple and afterwards, called Merkava mysticism. So is the idea of the Merkava, the chariot, and the chariot is comprises angels, in fact, who have four faces. The face of an ox, the face of an eagle, the face of a lion, and the face of a man. And so there are four such beings, each one with four faces, and between them is a kind of platform or above their head. So all this is like a chariot for some emanation, some aspect of the divine. So it's and the animal, the Pnei Shor, that relates to the source of the animals in the world. The Pnei Nesha, the face of the eagle, that relates to the birds in the world. And the face of the man relates to human beings and to the animal soul of the person. And the face of the lion, well, very often it's described as the source of the wild animals. There's the ox, which is like the domestic animals, the behemot. There is a word in Hebrew which generally categorizes more domestic animals. And there's another word, chayot, which is the wild animals, which are not domesticated in the same way. Here, however, it's taking the lion image as something on another level. Now let's see. The Hainu Shaha Behema, this is the second line on this second page, which doesn't seem to have any page numbers visible. And so it's the second line in the middle of the line. Hainu. Just after note 9. Hainu Shaha Behema Nichlelet Bifnei Shor. The animal is absorbed in its root, which is the face of the ox. See, while it's down here in the world, it's an animal walking around in the field. But then when it's offered on the altar, it's absorbed in the face of the ox, which is its supernal source. V'al-yedei pnei shor, and through the face of the ox, he nechlalet bifnei ariya. It's then absorbed in the face of the lion. And the face of the lion is here being connected to a completely different concept. The lion which devours the offerings. Now, there is an event that took place in the book of Leviticus, Vayikra, when, in Shmini, that when the sanctuary was built, they put offerings on the sanctuary and fire came from heaven and burnt the offerings. So the initial process of the sanctuary was one with a heavenly fire, divine fire, which came and burnt the offerings. In the book of Kings, which describes King Solomon building the temple in Jerusalem, the same thing happens at the initiation of the temple, that fire comes from heaven and burns the offerings on the altar. So therefore there is a concept of divine fire which is on the altar. And the sages tell us that when they were traveling through the desert, they would put a kind of a big psachta. I'm not quite sure of the word for this. If you had a very, very big cooking pot and you had the lid of this cooking pot, like a big, big round lid of a, or oval lid, I imagine it, of a cooking pot, and they put that on the altar, and underneath it the fire crouched in the shape of a lion. So there was the... And that was the Arye de Achal Korbanin, the lion that would eat the offering. So there it was on the altar. Now, what is this lion that consumes the offerings? We're going to translate it into terms of the Sfirah. Shehu Pchinut Malchut de Atzilut Mekor Habriya Yitzira Asiya. It is Malchut, it's the tenth Sfirah of the realm of emanation, the realm of Atzilut, which is the source of creation, formation, and action. Vahainu. That means the ha'alat ha'korbanot, the elevation of the offering to b'malchut d'atzilut, it's going into malchut, kingship of the world of emanation, the world of atzilut, makor d'biyah, which is the source of the lower worlds. Let's just try and see this for a moment diagrammatically. So if we have Ein Sof above, and then we have different levels, which we may come to in a minute, and then we have Malchut over here, which is kingship, the tenth sphere. Are you able to see me?
It's okay.
And then we have the actual offering which is taking place on the altar down here. So somehow or other, through the face of the ox, which is its root, and it then is, as it were, transferred into the realm of Malchut, which is the lion, the face of the lion, and the lion which consumes the offerings. So it's being absorbed at that level. Now this quality of Malchut is, of course, the source of the different worlds, creation, formation, and finally action, until we are down here in this world. So it's being absorbed in the source of the world.
Is there a connection with between the lion and Malchut that
well,
apart from what you're saying, is it
more? I can certainly see connections, like for example the emblem of Yehuda, which is Malchut. The Malchut of Yisrael is a lion. So Gur Aryeh Yehuda, a lion's whelp is Yehuda. You know, so the imagery of a lion and kingship that flows. In fact, it's interesting. We often have the lion on the Torah. Yeah, on the Torah. Yeah. So it's an interesting. So it's. There's Malchut in terms of kingship, but Malchut in terms of divine revelation. We can understand the lion on the Torah. It's as if, you know, it's being given to us from the divine. So often you have two lions holding the Ten Commandments. It's a very old image. It's decoration both in the synagogue and on the silver choshen, the breastplate of the Torah, very often has that imagery. V'lachein haya hakchavat hakorbanot al mizbeach hachitzon. Now, this is why the offering of the korbanot was on the outer altar, shehi b'chatzah mishkon. Now, I'd just like to make another picture. We might come back to that one. But I just want to make a basic picture that we have here. We have here Kodesh HaKodeshim. This is just the Kodesh. Then we have the courtyard. And then we have the altar, which is over here. Now, this is the way it was in the sanctuary that was built in the desert. And the temple that King Solomon built, and for that matter the second temple, were variations on the same theme, just more complicated. Like the second temple had another courtyard out there, and the this part was built in a more complicated way. But it's this basic thing of three areas. The Holy of Holies, the Kodesh, where there was the menorah, for example, and another little altar. And then the outer courtyard and the big altar where the offerings were offered. Now, so the offerings were offered on this altar. Dehine, because the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, v'chein b'mishkan, and also in the sanctuary, Hayu Gimel Diorim. There were three realms. Neged Gimel Sugei Olamot, relating to three types of world. Olamot Ein Sof, the worlds of the infinite, Shilifnei Atzilut, which is before, higher than Atzilut. In other words, the infinite before Atzilut. Then Olam Atzilut, that's the second one, the world of emanation. And then Olamot Bia, and then the worlds of creation, formation, and action. Now, if we look at that on our previous diagram, so we would say that we have, this is the first kind, the world of Ein Sof before Atzilut. This whole realm over here is the second kind, and then we have the realm below it, is the third aspect of worlds, which are the created worlds. So this is Atzilut, which is really emanations, part of the divine, and then there's before Atzilut, before Tzimtzum, before the whole process of creation came into being. Now, if we go back into the diagram of the temple, the Kodesh Kodeshim, the Kodesh Kodoshim, the Holy of Holies, Hu Neged Olamot Ein Sof, Shelifnei Atzilut. That's like the worlds of the infinite before Atzilut, higher than Atzilut. V'oil Moed V'Heichal, then this sort of, this part, which is often called in the temple, it was called the Heichal, and in the sanctuary, it was called the Oil Moed. Hu Neged Olam Atzilut, that's like the world of Atzilut. V'azara v'chatzah mishkan, the courtyard of the temple or the sanctuary, Hu Neged Olamot Bia, is the three worlds, Bria Yitzira Asiya, the outer worlds, the lower worlds.
So we have the menorah in the
Atzilut realm.
In the Atzilut realm.
Yeah. And another little golden altar where incense was offered. Very fragrant, this, you walk in, incense. Now that, for this reason, the place where the offering would be brought, who al mizbeach echitzon, is on the outer altar, b'chatzah mishkan, in the courtyard of the sanctuary or temple, dimizehu b'chinat malchut. Now it seems that the altar, somehow was the malchut aspect of this inner realm. Vahaya b'chatzah mishkan, and it was there in the courtyard of the sanctuary, haynu kamoshu makoch labia, in the way, in the mode that it is the source of the lower worlds. So in other words, this outer altar somehow is like an extension of the holiness which is in here, and that altar signifies the tenth and lowest level of this realm of holiness, but it's accessible. See, no one is able, very few people can go into this area at any one time, and only once a year can the high priest go into that area. Here, there are Kohanim milling around, and to a certain extent, at an outer level, also the people who are bringing the offerings. So it's this is a less restricted area. And the altar is there as the aspect of that inner spiritual dimension. And it's there that the korbanot are able to be put on the altar, as it were, to reach their root in this inner domain. V'ha'alat ha'korban hu b'malchut d'atzilut, and so therefore the offering of the, bringing the offering is at the place which is malchut, kingship, of this realm of atzilut, of emanation, k'mo shehu b'bia, as it is in these lower realms. Hasedibazeh, and the way, the order with it, in which this happened, hu she'al yedei hakhavat ha'behema gashmit, through the offering of the physical animal, he nichlele b'fnei shor, it becomes absorbed, as we said before, in the face of the ox, u'kash'ole b'shorcha b'yitzira, as it rises up to its root, in its root, in yitzira, the world of formation, hinei alidei achilat hachayut yitzira, then through the fact that the level of the vision, as it were, or the spiritual dimension of the world of formation, nase aliyah b'olam abriyah, it ascends to the higher world of creation, v'alidei abirur sheb'olam abriyah, and through a transformation which is taking place there, nase aliyah b'malchut atzilut, it then rises to kingship of atzilut k'mo shehu b'bia, as it is in the world. The way that that it is in the lower world. So we're actually seeing here a process which can be called eating, because eating is a process whereby a person takes food into their mouth and they digest it, and there are elements of that food that then become part of the whole biological system of the person's body. Here we're looking at a spiritual dimension of this, that the animal is being offered up. Now the animal has got a spiritual dimension. That spiritual dimension, which comes from the face of the ox, that spiritual dimension is as it were being extracted or drawn from the animal, and then rises higher and higher through this whole system until it comes through the lower worlds, until it comes to Malchut of Atzilut, and then it is able to connect with these higher realms. Now,
okay. This is where Anthony always used to remind us that it looks also like the floor of the stock exchange and what happens in finance.
Well, we're actually coming to just that. Because we're now going to talk about the breaking of the vessel. Shvirat HaKelim. Have you ever heard of Shvirat HaKelim?
Possibly. Okay. There was that, the light coming.
Yeah, right, the radiance being so intense that the vessels broke, mm-hmm. and everything was shattered, like a kind of cosmic cataclysm.
So, and if you shut your eyes.
Yeah.
Is that when the bright light which you see? Is that apparently an essence of it or something?
Well, look, you might have heard that.
Is that breaking the vessels? Does that occur at the same time that the first 700 or so generation of souls are created? Does that all happen at the same time, or is that a later period after the shattering of the Kalem?
There is a concept of souls, Torah and souls being, having some kind of existence long before the world was created. So the root of the souls, and for that matter of the Torah, going very deep into Ein Sof, into the infinite. But here, there is a process of radiance which is flowing and then into vessels, and in a process of creation which is really the world of Atzilut. It's like a stage in the creation of the world of Atzilut, and then because the radiance is so intense and the vessels are weak in some way, they are broken. And the radiance is scattered, and that radiance is called Orot of Tohu, the radiance of chaos. The radiance of chaos which precedes our physical creation. And then comes a new stage in creation, which is making Olam HaTikun, making the world of repair. And the fact that this radiance of chaos has fallen into the world, and you have this realm of chaos which is radiance and klipot, shells for the radiance. And sometimes you have the image that the shells, the klipot, are broken vessels. They are the bits, so to speak, of broken vessels. That makes up the physicality of the world. And it's because of that, because of the radiance, which is a very intense radiance, in these shells, relating to the physicality of existence, that's why physical existence is so ambiguous and has so many problems associated with it, leading to Yetzer Hara, evil desire, wanting to do inappropriate things in some way destructive in terms of the whole spiritual cosmic order, because there is a very intense radiance which is pulling the person. That is this Orot of Tohu, this radiance of chaos. The process of eating is one where we are involved with the world in a manner which could be ambiguous or problematic or spiritual and holy. So that is this interaction which we call eating, which is taking place in
very basic. Very basic. We won't exist if we don't eat, and we won't be able to transform anything into consciousness if we don't eat.
You're right, but we might be eating someone else's food.
We're always eating somebody else's food, somebody else's ideas, somebody else's. I mean, otherwise we might as well just starve ourselves to death, but we shouldn't.
Well, that's not what the Torah said.
Of course not.
That's not. Okay. Now, Va'al Yedei, sorry, just a second. Dehine, behold, right, that's nearly halfway down, three words from the end of the line on this page. Dehine shoresh hadvarim. Hadvarim is the last word of the line. Dehine, because, behold, shoresh hadvarim agashmiim, the source, the root of physical things, hu mishvirat hakelim detohu, is from the breaking of the vessels of the world of tohu, of chaos. V'yesh v'zeh b'shnei ofanei birurim, and there are two ways of sifting the radiance which of tohu, of chaos, which is trapped in the klipot. Biru shemilamayla lamata, a sifting which comes from above to below, and ubiru shemilamata lamayla, and a sifting from below to above. Habiru shemilamayla lamato hu, the first kind of sifting. See, this is seen as the work of humanity, is this process of sifting. The fact that the person has to struggle with that spark and that shell, that is part of our, which may include writing a reference when you're borrowing someone else's idea. You write a reference to the article where they said that idea instead of stealing it. So that's the struggle, that's the sifting of the radiance. Now, Biro, the sifting which takes place from above to below is really a divine sifting. That's something, Shemiyad, this is all described in the Lurianic writings. Shemiyad achrei ha-shvira, immediately after the breaking of the vessels, nafal ha-kol ba-olam ha-briya, everything fell down to a lower level to the world of creation. Val yidei ha-biru, and through the sifting, a kind of divine sifting, hinei ha-muvchar shebezeh naseh b'china briya, what was the higher level became the world of Bria, of creation. Vahasha'a nafal yitzira, and what was left fell down to yitzira, to the world of formation. V'nidbare od, and it sifted there. V'al yidei habirua, hinei hamuvchar shebezeh naseh b'chinat yitzira. Through that process, the better part became the world of formation. Vahasha'a nafal lasiya, and what was left fell down to the world of action, v'nisbare od, and also gets sifted there. And through that sifting, hinei hamuvchar shebezeh naseh olam asiya, what is the best part becomes the world of asiya, and what is lower is the klipot. Right? So, here he's gone through, you see, world, ha'olam, has the same letters as the word he'elem, concealment. So the very fact of a world coming into being is in fact, in a sense, a negative process. It's a concealment of the divine. It's a concealment of the infinite. And here it's describing in the way that it's written, this is a non-muga mimer. It's a non-checked, non-edited mimer by the Rebbe. This is as it was written down by the Chozrim, after they heard the discourse, they wrote it down and they put a little bit of footnotes. But a checked discourse from the Rebbe usually has many more footnotes. And I think here there would have been a footnote to Eitz Chaim of Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, of Rabbi Chaim Vital, explaining the teachings of Rabbi Yitzchak Luria. Because this is a basic concept of the whole formation of existence. Lower and lower level, why there are these different levels, lower and lower levels, due to this process of birur, of sifting, as a result, or following the shvirat ha-kenim, the breaking of the vessels. So there we have, right. And now we have, v'habirur shemilamata lemaila, now, the sifting which is in our hands, which is from below to above, hu shal yidei avodat ha'adam, through the effort of a human being, bo'olam asiya, in the world of action, na'aseh ha'biru ba'asiya, the sifting takes place at that level, va'amuvchar shebezeh, and the higher, what he sifts out, the higher level, na'aseh olam ha'yitzira, becomes the world of formation. So, the human being, see, from this sort of divine action, you get the formation of these three worlds, creation, formation, action, and through the work of human beings, struggling with these klipot at different levels, we elevate things to higher and higher levels, and that is the way we take part in the process of tikkun, so that we elevate aspects up to the world of atzilut, so that there is the world of tikkun is re-established. And when it's completed, that will be the time of Mashiach, when the whole world, when the physical reality of the world will no longer be problematically ambiguous. It will be wholeheartedly positive. Whereas,
wholeheartedly shattered.
Shattered.
And light.
Well, you see, that's the intriguing thing about Jewish mystical thought, that the world is a world which can be the expression of the divine. It's a very mysterious idea, and even in among Jewish thinkers themselves, there is dispute about this. But the Kabbalistic and particularly the Hasidic image is that the world, qua world, can express the essence of the divine, because normally there is even in the Rambam prefers the image of a kind of spiritual olam haba, world to come, whereas Nachmanides, Ramban, and other Kabbalists look more at the image of this world. Although the Rambam, in his Mor Nebuchim, in his Guide for the Perplexed, describes physical life, the patriarchs making love, so and so made love with so and so, that is a incredible spiritual action because of this refined level of physical life. And the Rambam, in fact, presents that in more concrete terms than anyone ever presented it before. Which is why some academic thinkers, like the late Professor Joseph Weiss, thought that Mor Nebuchim, Guide for the Perplexed, was one of the sources of Hasidic thought, which he wrote in an interesting article. Now, and in fact, the Chabad Hasidim have a tradition that the Mezritch HaMagid would teach Mor Nebuchim to his disciples, who became later
Hasidic. What's the name of that scholar who you just mentioned?
Joseph Weiss.
W-E-I-S-S.
Yeah. Now, so there we have the work of a person which goes higher and higher into the world of Atzilut. So we're skipping a little. Dezeu inyan avodat, that is the concept, that's two-thirds of the way down. That's the idea of avodat ha-korbanot, of the service of the offerings. Shahabehema nichlelet ba'olam ha-yitzirah. The animal is offered on the altar here in this physical world. It is absorbed higher in the world of creation, of formation, sorry. And then it goes higher to the world of creation, and then it goes higher through what happens there is the lion that consumes the korbanot, and that is malchut, kingship, which rises up to atzilut, and then that quality of malchut, that lion, rises up, and then there is the interaction, like a female with a male, lahavdil elef havdalot, on an infinitely more spiritual level, that the feminine reaches towards the masculine with what is called mayin nukfin, feminine fluid, as it were, reaching towards the masculine, and the masculine responds with mayin dechulin, that's the mem dalet here, umakabel mayin dechulin, the masculine fluid from this level, which is called za, which za means zeh ampin.
Zema.
Zer Ampin, which literally means the small visage, and in abbreviation it's just written Zayin Aleph, and it's called.
Why do they always not spell it out?
I know.
I mean, it to do with not spilling seed or something ridiculous like that?
No, it's because, well, I mean, one reason is because these things, the tradition of these discourses begins as a manuscript tradition. It's very interesting that...
To keep it small.
Yes, so the fact that you can write a whole line in four letters, you know, with...
But it's exclusive.
It really makes it pretty impossible for all of us.
I'm not sure if that's what they were thinking of. That's certainly the effect.
That's a few, isn't it?
It is a problem. It is a problem. And so, you know, like modern editions will spell out the... but it still remains. Anyway, Zer Ampin is called the small image, the small visage, in relation to Arich Ampin, which is the world of Keter, which is a higher dimension, which is called which is Keter, and that's called Arich Ampin, the long visage, the great visage. So it's like perceptions of the divine, which of course is beyond sight. Lo ra'item kol tmuna, you did not see any image. So these parzufim, they're called, the word we use for parzuf, a face, is used by Rabbi Yitzchak Luria. It's to describe these perceptions of the sphira. And so we can speak of these sphira as zeh ampin, which is generally seen as male, because it's like a flow downwards, reaching to malchut, kingship, which is the feminine, which receives the flow and also provokes the flow by a flow upwards. So our service of God, our prayers, our keeping of mitzvot, our self-sacrifice in different situations, is the feminine flow which reaches upwards in this whole system and is joined by a flow which comes down. And that's the yichud, that's the unification which is achieved by the avodah, by the service of the individual.
Does the feminine have to instigate it?
Well, it's a whole process where there is something that comes from above that arouses the feminine below, and then the feminine
responds
and then there is a greater
plus and minus on magnets.
Which no, I mean just as a principle rather than a
So it's got all the subtlety that one might imagine in human relationships, which are a remez, a hint.
It's written by men.
And how would it differ if it were written by women?
I think they wouldn't, as it were, blame the woman.
Why blame the woman?
Because they're saying it's the woman who's provoking the...
Yeah, but here the woman represents the Jew. Here every Jew is the woman.
All right.
I'm only teasing.
Sorry.
I just do mine with a serious face and it makes for more amusement.
Now, why does there have to be this flow, this sifting? Why do we need these two kinds of sifting? And there is an explanation that the sifting which comes from above to below, that means the divine sifting, is only an inward process which is not really visible. And the outer process still might have problems. And so therefore there has to be the sifting from below to above, which is that the outer dimension is transformed. You see, if a person is trying to live according to the teachings of the Torah, then the outer dimension of their life takes on a form which is harmonious with those teachings. If it's only from an upper level that the transformation is taking place, so then there might be spiritual transformations and spiritual states, but they're not visible. The world looks like a world of greed and chaos and violence and crime and war. But if a person or many people are able to adjust their individual lives and the lives of their communities and of nation, that everyone is keeping the seven Noahide laws and the Jews are keeping 613 mitzvot, then the outer dimension of existence also looks in harmony with these spiritual processes. Okay. Now, so we've got to the point where the korbanot, the sparks which fell in the shvirat hakeinu, which fell in the breaking the vessels, and are there in the animal. Okay, so this little squiggle is the ox, and the ox has been brought to the altar, and the ox has been slaughtered, and it is now being offered on the altar, and there is a spiritual flow which is going up through that whole process that's just being described, reaching up to Zer Ampin. Reaching up to Malchut. Now, the image that he presents is that the altar represents the lion, which is Malchut, which is that the relationship goes as far as this. Whereas, when the Kohanim are eating, which is what we're contrasting this with, is a higher level. If we look at the end of this paragraph on the next page, 312, V'lechein Nikret. Now, so this is just going as far as Malchut. That's the eating of the altar. V'lechein Nikret Avodat Korbanot Achilat Mizbeach. Therefore, bringing the offerings, that's called the eating of the altar. V'lo Achilat Adam, but not the eating of the person. Liyod Da Adam, because when we say the person here, which is the Kohanim below, but it's also something spiritual above. It's this quality. The ascent which is achieved through the offerings, who rak bivchinat malchut, only reaches malchut. And that is the eating of the altar. But then there is a higher level, which is the achilat adam, which is the fact that the person, the Kohanim, are eating, and that is a higher dimension, because when that, at that level, the eating and the transformation is something altogether higher. Now, so therefore, we have here two kinds of concept of eating, and I think if we move on to the next page,
313.
Well, I suppose it's 313, but I haven't got a number on my page. It's got a big. It's got a paragraph beginning Omlam. Sorry about not having them. Omlam Achilat Adam. Mm-hmm. Having explained the whole process of the Korbanot, which it does in the part that we have skipped. And in much further depth, omnam, however, achilat adam, the eating, because the eating of the korbanot, of the korbanot on the altar, they just reach this level of malchut, kingship, the level of the lion which devours the korbanot. Omnam, but achilat adam, the eating by the human being, which is the kohen, hu amshachat or chadash, is a drawing down of a new radiance, shalamayim olamot, which is higher than the worlds. Da adam uprinat ze ampim, because adam means, man means this realm of this, these svirot, and in the nevuah, in the prophecy, the vision of Ezekiel, it says there, val dmuta kisei dmut kmare adam, above these angels with four faces, there's like a platform and then a throne, and on the throne is a form of a man, so to speak. So, and that is understood as the image, if you can say such a thing, of Zer Ampin, of these Sfirot. Don't forget that the Sfirot altogether relate to the human image. Chesed is the right arm and Vura is the left arm, and so on. So there is this question, or this relationship of images, and Bechinat Zah, and when we speak of Zer Ampin, that relates to the worlds of the Ein Sof, the Ein Sof flowing through that. And he quotes something and discusses that. So therefore, we have the idea that through, if we look, go down to the last three lines of this paragraph, shezeh nase al yedei achilat kohanim. This is achieved through the eating of the kohanim, and that means that through the fact that the kohanim are eating this offering that a person brought because he did a sin, he transgressed in some way, and he brought, albeit by accident, he brings an offering, a sin offering. The kohanim eat that. The altar has part, which elevates a certain level of radiance, which is really elevating his own animal soul. See, the animal part of the person is the problematic part of the person. And so the fact that we bring an offering, that connects the animal part of the animal, which is also relates to our animal part, to this level, so that it is integrated in a spherotic realm. But there is also another dimension which takes place, which is the Kohanim eating his offering, which brings about an integration and a transformation at that higher level in Atzilut, which connects with Ein Sof completely higher. Now, he then goes on to say, Vehine. All this is very abstract. I mean, it's abstract on two levels. On the one level, it's about Sfirot. In a sense, that's abstract. In another sense, it's not. You know, people can read something, like you can read an exciting story about someone traveling and exciting events or beautiful events taking place, and it moves the person. In discussion of these, like, spiritual dimensions, the soul is actually stirred. Sometimes the consciousness is also stirred. But certainly the soul is stirred. So just the fact of these images there, that whets the appetite or gratifies the soul. There's a certain sense in which that dimension of communication is a window from a spiritual realm which is very precious to the soul. But the other abstraction is that we are talking here about the temple and offerings in the temple and whether the priests, it's all happening in temple time. Now, albeit that we are expecting the rebuilding of the temple any minute. Nonetheless, the next part of the discourse brings it into our general lives today. Vehine kemoshe bizman, right, the last paragraph on this page. Around footnote 13, between 12 and 13. Just as at the time of the temple, there were these two things, the achilat mizbeach v'achilat kohanim, of the devouring of the offering on the altar and the eating by the priest, kamochem gam achshav, so too now. Yesh shnei achilot, shtei achilot, there are two kinds of eating, v'heim achilat chol, and that's eating in the weekday, Achilat Shabbat, and the eating on Shabbat, because that's like the eating of the altar and the eating of the priest, and he compares the eating in the weekday to the sifting which takes place through the offering on the altar, while eating on Shabbat is on a much higher level, which reaches to a higher dimension. And on the next page, there's a whole section about the ambiguity in the process of eating. This is on page 314, a long discussion of the way in which eating, you see, when we eat, are we elevating the food, or is the food dragging us down? Even if it's kosher food, see, there's another problem if the food is not kosher, so it's dragging us into something which is negative and forbidden by the Torah, which is a whole complex thing. It means we're struggling over here in this little knot with the radiance of Tohu, the radiance of chaos dragging us into its clutches. But even if we're dealing with food which is kosher, there is also the question, why are we eating and what are we doing when we're eating? And the possibility that there is actually a possibility of people eating in a very spiritual way. You could say that eating is also a metaphor for many other aspects of interrelation with physicality. So eating is like taken as a image, but it relates to other things as well. So are we being elevated, or are we elevating something else, or are we being dragged down? So that is, that paradox is there much more clearly in the week, because on Shabbat suddenly there is a transformation of physical existence. And aspects of physical existence which are ambiguous during the week somehow become innocent on Shabbat, and they become pure and positive on Shabbat, and we transform our relationship with the physical world, and it comes onto a different level. And in fact, the interactions of Shabbat are able to have a sense of this kind of realm of integration, as opposed to that kind of realm. That kind of realm, this realm here, Malchut, kingship, is still relating to the lower world. Whereas here, it has the atmosphere of the world of Atzilut. Now, he does speak here about a preparation for any kind of eating, being tefillah, being prayer. And there is a concept of first one prays during the week, puts on tefillin as a man, or says a bit Shema, or the Amidah perhaps. One goes into a spiritual realm, and then one has the power to achieve that sifting to the level of kingship, which one does during the week through eating. On Shabbat, there's an even greater requirement to pray in depth and to do contemplative prayer, to try to taste and experience the depths of contemplative spiritual prayer, so that then when one eats on Shabbat, it is really a spiritual interaction, integrating the world with godliness. Alright, we're running out of time. He then goes on to speak about the difference between, if you look on the next page, at the bottom of the page, Achilat Tzadikim and Achilat Beinanim. You have the idea that the Tzadik eats in one way, like Shabbat, and other people don't eat, they eat in the other way, like the Mizbeach, like the altar, the more ambiguous way. And then we come to Vehine on the penultimate page, right? Penultimate page. Vehine, and behold, Zeo ha-hefresh bein neshamot u-melachim. That's the difference between souls and angels. We're coming back to the angels under the tree. Souls are able to draw down the radiance which is higher than the worlds, whereas angels aren't able to do that, because if they drew down a radiance which was too high, the angels would disappear completely. Whereas we have souls which are able, which come from within the divine, and we're able to draw down an incredibly exalted radiance and not dissolve away. So, let's go on to the next paragraph, Omnam, which is actually the last paragraph. Omnam, but all this is the Malachim Mitzad Atzmam in their own right, that they're not able to receive a radiance which is higher than them, because that would dissolve them away. However, aval al yedei avodat, third line, aval al yedei avodat neshamot hatzadikim, but through the service of the souls of the tzadikim, hinei hem poalim gam al hamelachim, they are able to achieve that also the angels, shiye behem amshachat or chadash milamayla, that they will be able to draw down a new radiance which shalemayle me'olamot, from higher than the worlds. And that's what it says, that Avram omed aleim tachad ha'etz v'yocheilu. Avram was standing over them under the tree in the air. Through the fact that Avram stood over them, he achieved that they would have the way of eating of a man. The malachim itzad atzman, because the angels in themselves, they are on the level of the worlds. These things, the lion, the face of the ox, those are malachim. That's all an interaction among malachim. And the malachim can't get higher than that, which is basically the eating of the altar. but by the fact that Avraham Avinu is standing over them, he is able to elevate them so that they are able to eat at that level, and thereby draw down a new radiance which is higher than the world. And so just as it is with Neshamot and Malachim, so it is with Chassidim and Rebbeim, that the Chassid in himself, they are battling with negativity of the person. The person struggles with all kinds of negativity. But the Avodah of the Tzadikim is able to help that soul, that he's able, or she's able, to climb to that higher level. So therefore, just the same way that Avram is standing over under the tree with the angels, standing over the angels, helping them achieve something which is beyond what it means being an angel. And that's what relates also to explanations, whether the angels were eating, really eating, or not really eating. So Avraham Avinu and the Tzadikim, the Rebbeim, are able to stand over us and help us achieve something more, that there's some kind of extra spiritual dimension that we are able to achieve through this. And that's the step that a person is able to take, because there is a further level of spiritual input coming from beyond him. And that is the, and let's just look at the last four lines. V'zehu v'hu omed alem tachad ha'etz v'yochelu. He, Avram, was standing over them under the tree and they ate. Dal yedei ze asher hu omed alem. Through the fact that he is standing over them. Oiv zeh unzugu binden mit zeh. He's standing over them and he's bonded with them. Who poel, he achieves, shiye behem v'yochelu achilat adam, he achieves that their eating should be the eating of a man, that means on a higher level, v'haynu shu mamshich o'a b'li gvul, that means that he is able to extend. Now this, incidentally, was written, this was taught in 1952, actually, the winter of 1952. And in 1950, the previous Rebbe had passed away. So, in fact, in this discourse, the Lubavitcher Rebbe of Nachum Mendel is speaking about his predecessor, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, and he's saying that that Rebbe is able to extend a radiance which is infinite, b'chol mekusharav, to everyone he's connected with, and through that, they have greater chayut, greater life force in keeping Torah and mitzvah, and they're able to reach higher spiritual levels. Now there's a story of the Blujover Rebbe. The Blujover Rebbe was a Rebbe who was in concentration camp. And someone called Yaffa Eliach wrote a book called Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, published by Oxford University Press. And she went and interviewed a lot of people who had known the Blujover Rebbe. I can't remember if she spoke to the Rebbe himself. I think he was alive when he's unfortunately passed away now, but he was alive when she wrote this book. And she may have stories that he himself told her. But anyway, there was a story there that there were the Nazis, there were pits, long pits, deep pits. And they told people they had to run along and then jump over the pit, like long jump. They had to jump a long way over the pit, and if they fell into the pit, they would be shot. And the Blujover Rebbe also has to take part in this. And one of his Hasidim is with him, and the two run together, and they both, thank God, they both succeed in jumping over the pit, and they land the other side, and at that moment they are safe. So the other man says to this like frail Blujover Rebbe, how did you jump over the pit? He said, well, I thought of my great ancestors, the previous Rebbe before him. I connected myself to them and I was able to jump over the pit. But you, how did you jump over the pit? He said, I connected myself to you. Okay.
It's a beautiful word. It means transgenerational transmission.
Yes.
Sukabundan.